Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told. And where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. And there we have it. Welcome to an auspicious, glorious day in the Good Listening To Show clearing. We have Ruth Bratt, who is an extraordinary improviser extraordinaire, and she was passed the golden baton to be here in the show by Neil Malarkey of the Comedy Store Players. And just to blow some extra happy smoke at you, I believe that you are the first new core member of the Comedy Store Players, I think, in about 30 years, but I might be exaggerating.
Yeah, it's a real, it's definitely a few decades. Yeah.
And you're a singer because you're also part of Showstopper the Musical, a founding core member of that too. So you're a serial improviser. Because you're a singer as well, I was thinking, oh, wait, this is going to be giving Josie Lawrence a run for her money. Because of her.
It's the joy of my life singing with that woman.
And as we know, comedy improvisation being the joys of our lives, it's not about competing anyway. It's yes and yes and everyone pulls in their own different directions. And everyone's a winner, chicken dinner. So welcome to the show, Ruth. Very, very happy to have you here.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
Lovely. And as we tuned in just now, you were nom-nom-nomming by your kitchen window.
I was. I really misjudged a time. Really misjudged it.
Is that something you do a lot or just no?
Yes. I mean, it's exacerbated at the moment because we did the 50-hour improvathon at the weekend.
Yes.
And I did 42 hours. So... what it does is it really skews your relationship with time quite massively.
And skews your relationship with sleep.
hugely, on two
flights to Australia and back whilst you're improvising, I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, it's bonkers, really. But
and I'd be intrigued by asking you more about that anyway, because I was going to say that you've just come off the back of flushed with the success of 50-hour improthon.
Yeah, so do forgive me if I'm a bit squiffy.
No, but I do short-form comedy improvisation because Instant Wit is the company that I run in Bristol. We're about 10 years behind the Comedy Store, but even we've been going for about 30 years. So I understand and know exactly what you're up to in the cut of your jib, if you like. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, I've always had a very curious relationship with long form, particularly the improthons, because why I say that is because one of my audition speeches years ago used to be The Player King from Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Mm-hmm. And there's that idea of when you're just speaking to the wilderness and no one's watching or listening, what's the point of it? So I know that there is a point to it, but at 3 a.m, I can't imagine many people are watching, or maybe they are because it's being streamed.
Yeah, there are people who come and watch all 50 hours.
Wow. And is it being streamed as well, which makes sense in terms of it going to other parts of the world?
I don't think it was streamed, no.
Ooh.
No, because I think all of us feel, well, I'll speak for myself. I can't speak for everyone. Streaming it seems to go against the kind of the spirit of it, because it can only be experienced there and
yes.
then. And you know, recorded improv is always tricksy.
Yes.
Because you're missing half of the point of it, which is that it's ephemeral and in the moment.
Yes.
And, you know, half of the joy of improv is that a thing happens out of nothing.
Yes.
It happens it happens then.
Yes.
And then it's gone and it's done, you know.
How big was the squad that did the 50-hour one over the last weekend?
So altogether, I guess there were about 30 performers musicians and lighting and tech. And then I think... to 10 or 12 people did the full 50.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Including our technicians. you know, and it's a weirdly addictive thing, you know.
I'll take your word for it, because I just know that well, I suppose it's because the AGM, by about 10 o'clock at night, I've generally lost the plot anyway and need to go to bed. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny thing because you don't have to do all, that's the thing. No one has to do it. When we first started doing it, Ken Campbell was the one who introduced us to it, and he'd never told anyone that you didn't have to do the full 50. So everyone just sort of thought you had to. And the Canadians were like, no. you know, they all thought we were nuts. But, you know, it's a... There's something about, so I was chatting to Jamie Kavanagh last night, who's one of the Canadians who came over, and he talks about it like it's like the membrane that holds you in about, I can't remember what time, but, you know, after about 15 hours, that membrane has gone. So you're way more open and kind of honest and truthful and all those things. And I mean, crazy stuff happens, of course it does. Jamie and I just laugh at each other for a very long time. We can't help it. We catch each other's eyes on stage and that's it, you know. And it always happens at exactly the same time for exactly the same amount of time every year. It's clearly what our brains do, especially what our brains do in connection with one another.
Yes, the true nature of ensemble.
Know. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's just such a beautiful thing, and it's, you know, it's like a family and a community and a you know, and the audience create community as well. You know, they create like little friendship groups, and you know, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
I can imagine there's a parallel with an athletic, you know, running a marathon, the moment when you get through the pain threshold and then you're suddenly completely in flow when you get over all of the sort of hurdles of the pain barriers to get you to that point.
Yeah, we call it the gates of hell.
Yes.
And the gates of hell are about, I mean, there's two lots in a 50-hour, but they're around, they're that, you know, the overnight kind of like, On Saturday night, Sunday morning, so kind of 2 o'clock Sunday morning through to about 7.
So you've overcome the gates of hell many times, and that's a great life skill right there, which of course improvisation is a great life skill.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'll just ask you a couple of unexpected questions first of all.
Super duper.
For the audience, if we haven't met you before, and obviously I know and have researched and have really enjoyed doing that, but if someone goes, oh, hello, you look interesting, what do you do? So what's your favourite way of answering or avoiding that question, Ruth? So what does Ruth bring to the world?
If I'm doing a course where I don't want to tell anyone what I do, I say I'm an administrator, and then no one asks you any more questions. that's always my favourite thing to do. I'm an administrator. I always call myself a performer because I am an actor, but I don't kind of, I think that doesn't quite cover the full gamut. So I just say I'm a performer,
and that's all encompassing.
What?
And it, as we know, it's very polymathic, because obviously there's comedy, there's writing, there's singing, there's performing, there's improvising, and there's TV, there's film. It's a very polymathic capability. So
yeah,
we commend you to the house for having that polymathic capability. Next, just unexpected question before I start to curate you through the main thing is: how's morale? What's your story of the day, please?
Oh well. Last night I went out and I got drunk. I don't drink at all, really, and anymore.
Before you're coming on my show.
I know. But it was because me and Jamie went out and we were like, yeah, we got really overexcited. And I woke up this morning, and last night when I got in, quite tipsy, I put on a load of washing. So when I woke up this morning, all my washing was done, and I was like, well done me. So I think that's pretty, I'm going to say pretty good.
I love that.
I did washing without remembering I'd done it.
So you've hit the bottle again and you've done the washing. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's a great, great answer. So it's my great joy to begin to curate you through the journey of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. It's the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into a clearing or serious happy place of your choosing. Then there's going to be all the usual hoary chestnuts. There's going to be a tree, a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden bet, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So Ruth Bratt, wonderful comedy improviser, English actress and comedian. What is, where is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
I was trying to think of this, and weirdly, I think most of my clearings are quite cluttered. So I love the South Bank, which is not a clearing at all, but I'm very inspired by the South Bank. And then I don't know if you've heard of it, Dennis Severs House. Have you ever heard of Dennis Severs?
No, tell me more. Dennis Severs House.
Beautiful. So Dennis Severs was just a bloke in East London, and it's in Spitalfields, and it's an old Georgian townhouse, and he just did it up as it would have been, and he followed a family's fortunes from Georgian times to sort of, I don't know, Victorian times, I guess. And the top floor is a weird Dickens room, but in the basement is the most beautiful kitchen with a fireplace, and in the winter when you go, I remember going with my friend Bill and my dad, and we just sat in the kitchen looking at the fire for what seemed like hours. Beautiful place.
You've given me two beautiful clearings there. Well, you've got the South Bank, which has the freneticism of the energy of just the cosmopolitan quintessence of London, if you like. And then there's Spitalfields, which is the sort of more Dickensian side of it, if it's very authentic.
Yeah.
So I'm attracted to both. So where would you like us to go?
Let's go to the South Bank, because I think you could get a tree in there easier. Also, I don't know that we want to put a tree in the fire.
Like, we can either be in the sort of wedge into the Spitalfields house or shove it on the South Bank. But you've chosen the South Bank.
South Bank, yeah.
Okay, so I'm now going to arrive a bit Waiting for Godot-esque and a bit surreally with a tree in your South Bank, and we're going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. So this is where you've been kind enough to have taken 5 minutes, or as long as you've needed, to think about four things that have shaped you, Ruth Bratt, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention, and that's where the random squirrels come in. Oh, squirrels, borrowed from the film Up. And then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So over to you. It's not a memory test. I'll curate you through as we go. So how would you like to interpret the shaking of the canopy of your tree?
Oh, four things that have shaped me. Well, I find all these questions very hard. I'm not really a kind of navel-gazy kind of person. And I think maybe that's an improv thing. I kind of just accept where I am and what I am and, you know, work with what it is. So I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, so in terms of my career, or in terms of who I am in that sense, so when I was 20, I was doing American studies. I was going to be a human rights lawyer. Ooh. So I was doing American studies, and I was going to do a conversion course at
the
end.
That's slightly more cooler than saying I'm an administrator, human rights lawyer. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I know. I'd have been a terrible human rights lawyer, by the way. And I went to the States because you did a semester abroad. And me and my friend Hannah went to a place called Middlebury, which was tiny college. I think there's like 2,000 students, and I think the town only has like 6,000 people in it. And we were at Nottingham, and there's 15,000 students at the university, let alone, you know, so it was like the opposite. And so we were doing our courses, which was African American narrative and history of American women. And in my off time, I was doing just some, you know, I joined a theatre group, and one of the guys was doing, this is a long-winded story, one of the guys was doing a directing course, and he was directing a Noel Coward play. And he said, please, will you, Blythe Spirit, I think. And he went, please, will you be in it? Because you've got the accent. So it's like, you're a ringer. And I went, yeah, okay. So we did it, and he had his feedback. And then his tutor said to me, who are you? And I went, oh, hello, you know. And he said, and why aren't you doing any of my classes? And I went, oh, well, I'm not allowed to. I have to do African-American narrative and history of American women. And he said, but you're going to do this, right? And I went, oh, no, I hadn't really thought about it. And it was the first time that I think anyone had said to me, you could do this as a job, as a living.
What a great mentor, someone that suddenly in that yes and moment just went spotting somebody's potential and just said, you're going to do this.
And that was the only conversation I ever had with him. I don't know his name.
Do you remember his face? So you've got an energy.
I do. I remember his face and I remember his hair. He had quite wild hair is what I remember. And then I came home and I went, well, maybe let's try this then.
Was he a professor of drama then?
I think he was. Yeah, he was a drama. Yeah. So he ran the directing course.
It's wonderful, isn't it? How life's doors, when they open and they really are for you, you just sort of fall through.
Yeah, and I just went, you know, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I said yes and to things before I knew what improv was, and I just went, yeah, all right, let's try that then. So I think that was very formative. I mean, you know, that started what has now been, I don't know, 20, well, probably 30 years now we're coming up to. In acting and performing.
So great shapage, being present at the age of circa 20, but just being encouraged through a door with a very lubricated hinge into the world of hecting. I love that.
Yeah.
Great shapage. Shapage number two, please. If we ever get stuck, I've got a bell, by the way, which is...
Okay.
We're not stuck, but this that was a great first shapage. What's the second thing that shaped you?
I'd say all of my friendships. All of them. The ones that I still have, the ones that I don't have anymore, the ones that ended badly, the ones that continue to be glorious and fulfilling, and because every friendship you have is transformative, I think. Every friendship you have.
Nice answer.
Thank you. I think often, you know, women talk about female friendships, and I have incredibly strong female friendships that I am so grateful for and that, you know, lift me up and provide succor and, you know, real joy and strength. But I also have brilliant male friendships that I think are sometimes kind of forgotten about, you know, that's, you know, some of my just most joyful moments are with friends of both sexes, you know, all genders, you know. And I think I think every friendship you have is a real gift. And I think we can get really caught up in sort of romantic relationships, and sometimes you forget the platonic ones.
The blissfully platonic, yes.
Yeah, and I think they're sort of in some ways more important than, you know, platonic relationships have lasted longer.
Yes.
Way longer.
They're able to be more constant than if you have a metaphorical or literal divorce from an intimate relationship. Yes.
Yeah.
Different type of intimacy. I get that good relationships are intimate in any case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I find that those really shape me hugely and continue to do so and change me. You know, you meet people who change you. And I think because of the kind of job I do, like, you meet so many people, so many people. So you have friends who are work friends. You have friends who are friend friends. You know, you have work friends who are friend friends. You have, you know, you have people who are friends for, I don't know, the duration of a job. And then they're not anymore, but they're still friends. Like, you know, that's like a...
What's lovely is the through line of Ruth Bratt, brought to you by the word friendship.
Friendship.
that's lovely.
Yeah.
That's very a lovely thing to have at the core of what we're talking about. Third shapeage?
All my experiences, be they good or bad. bad stuff happens. I don't know if I have to swear, so I stopped myself there.
You just said bad stuff happens, but that didn't sound sweary to me.
bad stuff happens, and I think that's vital. Like, I'm as shaped by the negative stuff as I am by the positive stuff. And I don't mean like in a negative way. I think I'm positively shaped by negative experience.
And if I may, you may or may not be talking about this, but we were going to do this a few months ago when Neil Malarkey first passed the Golden Baton.
Yeah.
But do you mind me mentioning, you had an aneurysm, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I had a brain hemorrhage, yeah, on stage, which was brilliant.
Were you going to, just forgive me, were you going to talk about that anyway? Or
I wasn't, but I don't mind talking about it. I haven't talked about it on social media. Like, people are like, where have you been? And I'm like, I'm not going to talk about this on social media. That's weird, you know. So we were doing Showstopper in Edinburgh, and we did the opening number, and then my head exploded. Imploded, really.
Did you know what was happening? Obviously, you've never had it before.
No idea. It felt like the worst migraine. It was the worst pain I've ever experienced, and it was like the worst migraine. So I left the stage. I think actually the other people on stage are slightly more traumatized by it than I was, because I remember the basic gist of it all, but I don't, you know, I was in a lot of pain, so I don't have a strong memory of it. I think it's a bit like, you know, giving birth, like people don't have, they remember the sort of, you don't remember the bad bit.
The other gates of hell.
The other gates of hell, yeah, yeah. So they...
All the gates of wonder.
I left the stage, which you can do in an impro show, right? And they carried on.
So you didn't have a dramatic collapse. Obviously, you were collapsing, but...
I sat down, and so I was just sort of sitting holding the table, kind of thinking, wow, this hurts, and trying to work out what to do about it, but not listening to anything else. At all, because you can't.
So did somebody notice this is strange and then just get you rushed to hospital?
No, so I I left the stage, and because it's improvised, like, that could happen anyway.
Yeah.
And Pippa noticed that I hadn't come back on, so she came backstage, but it's quite dark backstage, and I sort of went like that, and she thought I was kind of going, I'm not coming back on, carry on. So she knew I'd gone off, but there's no way of telling anyone that, you know, they couldn't tell anyone on stage or anything.
Also, you'd never had it before, obviously, so one doesn't really know.
Yeah, I was like, maybe this is just a bad headache and it'll go in a minute and I can go back on. So I managed to get into the dressing room, and then one of the venue staff happened to come in and found me on the floor and said, do you need me to go? I went, yes, please. So then it all kind of kicked in. We couldn't get an ambulance because there just weren't any. So then we were trying to get me a cab to get me to go to hospital. I was saying I wanted to go home, but luckily our producer was there and she was like, no. And
were you able to think straight? You sound incredibly congruent about what was happening, because if I have migraines, I can barely construct a sentence.
Yeah, no, I couldn't really. What I meant when I was saying things like, I want to go home, what I meant was, I want to lie down and I don't want to be here, was what I meant. So I wasn't very clear about what was going on. And then they managed to get me outside. We were going to get me into a cab because they wanted to get me out before the show came down, because that would be 750 audience. And then, of course, just as we got out, the fire alarm went off. So the whole place was evacuated. So the last thing the other showstoppers had seen was me just leaving the stage, looking a bit out of it. And then the next thing they saw, they were evacuated over the road, and they just saw me sitting in a wheelchair waiting to get into a cab. And they were like,
ooh.
So by the time we got to hospital, I was beside myself. And they zip you straight through, because it was quite clear there was something going on.
It was, if I may, a bit of a showstopper.
It was a bit of a showstopper. It didn't stop the show. I mean, that's the interesting thing. The show carried on.
The show must go on.
So then they did a CAT scan, gave me some morphine and said, you've had a brain hemorrhage. And I said, oh, dear.
Shame.
Oh, no. The morphine makes you just go, oh, well.
So were they? So what was done? They must have plugged what was bursting, obviously. Or...
No, so it was a weird one because it wasn't an aneurysm. So it wasn't, you know, there was nothing to plug. I had to have, so I've had all the tests, which again is a great thing because now I know that my brain's fine. You know, there's no nasties in there because I've had every test under the sun for it. And yeah, they couldn't find a cause. Just one of those things.
I'm very happy to report you the right way up.
And the right way up, yeah. So I had 12 days in, 12 days in Edinburgh. I tell you what, if you're going to have any kind of brain incident, have it in Edinburgh. Their neurology unit is unbelievable, unbelievable. I mean, the weirdest thing was because it was very hot, that 2 weeks was really hot, and you get your own room. Once you come off the high dependency unit, and every morning I woke up convinced I was in a terrible resort in Spain. And every day I'd be like, this resort, and they're like, it's not a resort, Ruth. I'd be like, oh right, yeah, no, I know it's not. Yeah, so
this show comes into the UK Health Radio show space as well, and that's a sort of health radio network, which is why I was intrigued to go a little bit into that. And thank you for being so
welcome
about that.
I mean, it's been fascinating, and I was genuinely concerned my brain wouldn't work the same way when I went back.
Yes.
Because you're like, well, I don't know if it's changed the way I improvise or the way I think, or I don't know. So I was really, and obviously there's an added thing that it happened on stage. So the first time you go back on stage, you're like,
yes.
You know. So it's, I'm pleased to say it hasn't altered the way I improvise in any way.
And you haven't found another sort of skill of being able to sing spontaneously in Japanese or anything?
I wish I'd come out with a funny accent or something. That would have been brilliant. No, I just had when they, my favorite bit of it was they do so many favorite bits. What a wonderful experience. My favorite bit, they do all these cognitive tests, you know, and you have to remember five objects and all that stuff. And they got to the maths portion of it. And I started doing it and I couldn't. And I went, just so you know, I couldn't do this before the brain hemorrhage. You've got no chance now, mate. And the nurse went, maybe you need to get better at maths.
Good nurse right there.
Yeah, thanks very much.
So I think we could be we'll get on to the three things that inspire you now. So what about that?
So I find people who strive for more and commit to striving for more very inspiring.
Nice answer.
I don't like people who settle for, and it's not I don't like them, I just don't find that interesting. So I don't find it interesting on stage when people sit in a comfortable place.
Yes.
I'm like, come on.
Come out to play a bit of yes and rather than no but, you idiot.
Yeah, or even if they're yes anding, but they're yes anding in a very safe way that means they're in their comfort zone. I'm like, yeah. Oh, show me your vulnerability. That's what I want. That's what I live for. So what I like to do is, you know, push myself. I don't want to do the same thing again and again and again. That's why I improvise, I suppose. But, you know, I can't sit on my, you know, one of the things with Showstopper is as soon as we get good at something, we're like, right, what's the next thing that's going to be difficult? And that to me is massively inspiring to be around and to be around a group of people who, I mean, all the performers I work with, I find hugely inspiring. On, you know, I find that the Comedy Store players, like, they were what I watched when I was a kid, you know.
Yes.
So that's hugely inspiring and mind-blowing to kind of be with them on a stage. And I find, you know, in Showstopper, I find the people that I work with there, their commitment to always pushing for more and pushing for better and pushing for the impossible, I find.
I was at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School with somebody called Julie Clare, and she was in the Theatre School. So if you see her, say hello from me.
I will. I saw her at the weekend. She was doing a bit.
Lovely. Great answer. Second thing that inspires you?
The twinkle in another performer's eyes
Nice.
I find that massively inspiring. I did a one-woman show, and I'm glad I did it, and I would never do it again because I missed that.
The collaboration.
To me, that's the most inspiring thing, is seeing someone else. They've got something has sparked, and they've got an idea, or they've found something funny, or they've done something funny, and that little twinkle, you know, the thing I missed most in the pandemic was the twinkle.
Lovely, you know? Answer.
Yeah.
Third inspirer?
Make things. I find people who make things inspiring, and I find when I make things, I can make more things. So I started doing pottery because it's very meditative and beautiful, and, you know, it's very mindful in the best meaning of that word.
Yes.
You cannot be thinking of anything else when you're making a pot. But I find that when I've made a pot, or when I've done, you know, or when I paint, you know, I do an online art class, and I love it because it sparks other inspiration, right? To write, or to, you know. So all those things I find.
You should show your pots to Johnny Vegas because he's a potter.
He is a potter, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of us around who do both.
And what's your most recent pot, please? Or is it not just pottery? That was just an example, maybe.
I'm going in tonight to... Should I bring you a pot? I'll show you one of my favourites.
Yes, Anne, bring me a pot, please.
Yeah, fill in. Phil Barry.
She's off to get a pot. And I didn't think of a rhyme. So there we are. That's good. She'll be back in a moment. Oh, hello. that could be your brain.
it's a globe.
It is a globe. That is a globe. If I may, and no offence, it's a slightly wonky one because it's got a flat bottom.
It has got a flat bottom because it collapsed.
So the Earth is both flat and round, thanks to you.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
To both the flat earthers and the fact that the flat Earth has, you know, offices all around the globe. Yeah.
Obviously, it's easier when it's got a flat bottom to...
Yes, it stays the world rolling away from you because it's your world and it mustn't roll away from you.
Yeah, that's one of my most recent ones. I'm really interested in glazes and...
Yes, looks quite moonscapey now you've placed it.
It's quite moonscapey. Got a glaze on that.
Whoa, what a pleasure being in your orbit. This is great for a podcast, by the way. We're watching
it. No one can see it.
But we can imagine it.
It's a globe with a flat bottom.
Marvellous.
It's made with a terracotta crank.
Ruth Pratt, brought to you by The Word Friendship and Terracotta Crank, please. We like that. Okay, now perfectly segueing into two things that never fail to grab your attention. Oh, squirrels, you know what never fails to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you. Squirrels.
Other people's conversations.
Your nosy thing. I love them. Eavesdropping.
Yeah, I love other people's conversations. And I get very caught up in them, to the point that when I'm with some, you know, my ex used to be like, can you please concentrate on our dinner? So I'd be like, oh yeah, but did you hear that? No. But I do have bat ears as well. Like, I've got very, very sensitive hearing. So I can hear quite a lot. But I love it because you get...
I love the fact you're resting your chin on your glow.
I know. I love it so much. I get characters, you know? So I'm always... It's amazing when you talk to people or overhear people and it's like a fully formed character. Like, I met a woman the other day. This stuff will never not be interesting to me. When someone's got an amazing voice... She was this very old lady. She was in the queue for the baker. And she went, oh, I've come all the way from Tottenham on the bus because I couldn't get any bread and butter pudding. And I had such a long conversation with her. And she's now one of the voices that I do on a regular basis because I love it. So anything like that is like, as soon as I hear a voice or see a walk or...
Yeah, you're in very good company. My all-time comic hero, Stan Laurel, but I remember reading that Oliver Hardy grew up in a Texas hotel that his parents owned, and he would just sit people-watching and banking characters for his future.
It's so useful. And it's the thing that, like in the pandemic, when everyone was like, just make your own work. And I'm like, but I haven't seen anyone.
Yes.
Like, I can't, I find that, you know, the tidbits are the things that make me want to do. I'm a collaborator.
Yes, that's really clear. And Rudy Shelley, my ancient European mystic, acting teacher, acting teacher, would always say, acting is never boring. You should always be people watching, which is true.
True.
So I'm right there with you being Miss People Watcher. And now we could be onto a one or quirky or unusual fact about you, Ruth Bratt. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
I have a plank of wood in my cupboard under the stairs that has moved with me 4 times, 5 times, because one day it's going to be really useful.
So you have the plank of life. Walk the plank of life.
Just there's a plank of wood, and my ex used to go, do we need this plank of wood? I'm like, not yet. One day we're going to need it.
And he's gone now. He's an ex, whereas you still got your wood.
He's gone, but the plank of wood is still there. I've had a longer relationship with a plank of wood than with any man.
I commend you to the plank. That's a lovely answer. Lovely. So the day you're with a partner and you get your plank out, that's where you need to sort of, we're building.
I'm like, I'm done. I've finished.
we're building my bridge to my future. I love that. That's awesome. Okay, now we've shaken your tree. Hurrah! So now we move away from the tree, but we stay in the clearing, which is still in your wonderful place in Shoreditch, stroke the South Bank. We can have both. I know we went to the South Bank. And now it's alchemy and gold, please. When you're at purpose and in flow, Ruth Brett, what are you absolutely happiest doing and what you're here to reveal to the world?
I'm happiest being on stage and letting stuff happen and being surprised by the stuff that comes out of my mouth as much as the stuff that comes out of someone else's mouth. The joy of the realisation of your own brain, I think, is something everyone could do with. Because we're very, you know, I don't think it's useful in life to be quite as open as improvisers often are. You know, sure, there's things you can take from improv that you can use in life, but not all of it. But there's something beautiful about the freedom of thought and, or no, it's not even thought. But that's a thing that I find interesting with people. Like, oh, you think so fast. Like, no, I'm really not thinking. There's no conscious thought going on with me. Every improviser is different. Mine's like, you know, from synapse to mouth without anything.
Nice expression. Define your comedy improvisational technique from synapse to mouth. Yeah. And I've got a plank of wood in the background. It'll come in useful at any point. Love that. Okay, now we're going to award you with a cake. Hurrah!
I love cake.
That's a good answer. What cake would you like, metaphorically? Someday I'll get around to actually bothering to send people the cakes they want.
I'd like a Victoria sponge, please. But with real cream, not buttercream.
None of that nonsense.
Real cream in the middle.
Real cream, you said there. Yeah, absolutely. A Victoria sponge, metaphorically, and hopefully somebody literally is yours. Well done. So now you get to put a cherry on the cake. And that's stuff like, what's your favourite inspirational quote, Ruth Bratt, that's always given you sucker and pulled you towards your future?
I have it on the back of my phone.
you do? You've just shown me the phone case.
Yeah, it's from a fortune cookie. And now, when I say this, you're going to go, really? That gives you... Okay, it makes me laugh so much. And my fortune was, if your desires are not too extravagant, they will be granted. Which seems stupid, but actually it's a really fascinating thing to think about. Like, you'll get what you want if you don't want a lot.
You don't overwish.
But if you want a lot, what else can happen? So I use it as a, I find it funny in number one, and I'm always looking for the funny. I always find the funny thing. But I also find it quite inspiring to go, you know what? Maybe there's more.
Of all the cookies you've had, that's the fortune cookie one that you've kept, or is that the only fortune cookie that you've ever opened?
I had another one on the fridge, but I think it fell off. So
that's now under the fridge.
That's the one that stayed.
And just give it to us again, because it does require a little bit more thought than just the face value. It's good.
If your desires are not too extravagant, they will be granted.
It's a little bit.
It's pretty bleak.
It's meant to keep you in your box and don't overwish.
But to me, it's like, I think it's kind of, it makes me want to be more extravagant.
As in, you know. I want more than that.
Yeah. All right. I might have got that wish, but what about the other ones? You know, and you might, and that's the joy. Like, you can try and do this, but you might not get it. But at least try and do it.
Lovely. Okay, next question is, with the gift of hindsight, what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of Ruth Bratt?
Oh, I didn't think I'd give myself any advice. But just like, because if you give yourself advice in hindsight, you're missing out on all the bad stuff, right? So it's like, you know, I could tell myself not to do certain things or to do certain things, or but those things that I did or didn't do mean I am where I am now. So my advice would be like, on you go.
Keep on keeping on, carry on.
Keep on keeping on, crack on, mate. I don't, I don't think I'd tell myself to do anything.
And I love the fact you're still curved over your planet. I love that. It's Ruth Black's planet.
I'd tell myself to start pottery sooner.
No, that's great. Start pottery sooner. The planet of you is very at peace with just keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
When I was researching you, there was a tweet that came up immediately, or some social media thing, which says, filling in a medical form for the DLA is enough to bring on a fucking medical condition, you said. So my question to you is, had you just done an application for the DLA before you had your aneurysm, or is that separate?
No, I've been trying to fill in one because I'm not allowed to drive, obviously. Yeah. And you have to fill in all these forms, and trying to get through to DVLA is impossible. When I first had that, they said don't drive and you have to let them know. And I've been trying for 6 months to let them know, but I've had a brain hemorrhage. So I can't, like, for ages, I couldn't cognitively do it. Then it's so difficult to find any of the information. And when you're not 100% there anyway, you're like, I can't do it. So I've just sort of been ignoring it and hoping it'll go away. And so I finally found the form, and I was like, right, I'm going to fill in this form, and I literally got halfway through the form and just started to cry and put the computer away. But it's so complicated, and I understand, you know, it's an important thing to make sure that people are healthy when they're driving. But there is a big part of me that's like, guys, these are people who've had brain hemorrhages. You're making it really
stop with the forms already. Yeah. Yes.
And I was like, if I hadn't had one already, I'd be having one now. Yeah, it was really just
the sort of dark humor side I saw to the tweet or whatever it was.
Yeah. Right?
And you have implied that there was more of a recuperation period than you've let on.
Yeah, so you're not allowed to go back to work for 8 weeks.
Yes.
And I had some complications with some of the tests that they do actually caused some secondary nightmares. So I had you have a tube that goes up through your femoral artery, so up through, you know, your thigh, your groin, and it's just supposed to, they put a plug in it and it's just supposed to, it'll be fine. But my plug popped, so I had a huge hematoma in my leg. I think that was when I was like, oh, I think this might be quite serious. So it meant that I couldn't, I couldn't walk properly for quite a long time because I had a bruise, like, you know, the size of, like, my whole thigh was basically a bruise. So it took quite a long time. So I didn't, my first gig back, because actually you can do the stuff. So like, I did a voiceover, and that was fine. But then I had 3 days in bed.
I'm with you. Yes,
you're so tired. You're so
your
tired.
Energy was taking a while to resurface. Yes,
so I did my first gig post. What did the guy call it? Brain insult. That was what one of my doctors called it, a brain insult. I did my first gig post-brain insult in December. So August, so September, October, November.
And is that just his catchphrase, or was that a thing?
No, he said it's not a brain injury, it's a brain insult. Okay, well, I'll take it. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's quite a long process.
And again, yeah, very happy to see you here and the right way up, being incredibly sparky. And I know you've just had your inaugural show for the Comedy Store last Sunday as a new official core member, Bob.
Yeah, it was lovely. I do love them all so very much. They're such a brilliant group of people, you know. And they're just so wonderful, you know. And, like, there are times, like, so Josie rings me up to see how I'm doing. And I'm like, if I told 14-year-old me that I'd be having a little chat with Josie Lawrence, you know, just a little chat on the phone every now and then, I'd be like, no, you're not. You know, she came around for Christmas Day. Christmas Day with Josie Lawrence, that's insane. You know, so, and also, like, and Lee Simpson, who has been one of my, sorry, my cat's.
I thought you were looking for a very small version of
this. No, my cat's doing crazy cat things. You know, Lee's been one of the people that I've watched on stage and just adored for years. And then to play with him, you know, in The Players, and to do, I did an improbable musical with him, which was just, and Josie and Neil Ashdown, and genuinely one of the highlights of my life doing that.
Neil Ashdown played me in Life Game, because I've met Phelim, and I was featured in Life Game many years ago.
Blah-de-blah.
Anyway, we're ramping up now to a bit of Shakespeare in a moment. But just before we do, we're going to talk about legacy with Shakespeare. But just before we do, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. So who would you most like to pass the golden baton along to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going?
I'd like you to talk to Lucy Trodd.
Lucy, what a great name. Lucy Isn't Trodd.
It? Lucy Trodd. Trodd. She's in Showstopper. She and I are writing partners. We wrote a sketch show, and then we had two series on Radio 4. She's one of the delights in life.
What a great way to ramp them up for coming into the clearing. A delight in life. I give you Lucy Trodd.
She's tremendous.
Wonderful.
Bloody love that woman. And this is right in her wheelhouse. She'll love this.
Get in. Thank you. And now, Shakespeare, all the world's staged, all the better, merely players. So this is now legacy. How, when all is said and done, Ruth Brett, how would you most like to be remembered?
Kind and fun. Can't ask for anything more than that. Kind and fun. There's a... So some guys I know wrote a musical, and it's about a couple in Hollywood, a gay couple. And when one of them died, and then the other one took his own life afterwards because he couldn't live without him. And the note that he left was just, it's no fun without you.
Oh.
And I would love to be remembered as fun. I don't have any, you know, I don't want any, you know, fame or fortune or...
You don't want a big sort of pottery globe erected on the South Bank.
100%. That just says fun on it. Yeah, I think kind and fun would be. And you know what? Like, so Andy Smart died last year.
Yes.
And everyone talked about how kind and how fun he was. And that to me is like the most beautiful thing. And my dad died a few years ago, and the same for him. Just kind and fun. And I think if you can be remembered as that, then you've won. Okay.
Where can we find out all about Ruth Brett on the old hinterweb, please?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter, at Ruth Brett. You can follow me on Instagram, at Brat Bomb, obviously. You can follow me on TikTok. I'd love to tell you what my handle is on TikTok. I'm very old and TikTok completely foxes me. So good luck finding me on there. I don't have a website or anything like that, but mostly I think it's more fun to find me on a stage because I'm way more interesting on stage than I am in person or on social media.
Pish and tosh. Wonderful. You're also on the Curtis Brown website as well.
I am on the Curtis Brown website. There you go. And probably on the Say So Voices website as well. My two wonderful agents, if anyone needs a voiceover agent, please Say So Voices. If anyone is an actor, Curtis Brown.
And just do your Tottenham woman in the old bread queue.
Oh, I come all the way from Tottenham. They didn't have bread and butter put in there, so I come on the bus.
Wonderful.
she did get some bread and butter pudding in Dunn's the Baker, I am pleased to report.
Lovely.
And her favourite meal in the world is steak. And a long time ago, she was great.
As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening to Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, is there anything else you'd like to say, Ruth Pratt?
Oh, no, it's just been very lovely. It's a lovely way to spend an afternoon.
Right back at you. I've thoroughly enjoyed meeting and talking to you too. Thank you so much. So thank you for watching on Facebook as well. This has been the lovely Ruth Pratt, now a core group member of the Comedy Store Players, to be found upon the stage at the Comedy Store. It's every Sunday, more or less, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, every Sunday.
Lovely. It used to be twice a week, but it's once a week now. Is that right?
Yes, every Sunday. And we're normal. So I'll be there most Sundays.
Lovely.
But not all, but most.
Lovely. So thank you very much indeed. If you'd like to be in the show too, look at thegoodlisteningtoshow.com and tune in next time for more stories from The Clearing. I've been Chris Grimes. That's been Ruth Pratt. Good night.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.
Ruth, you've just been given a damn good listening to. If I could just get your immediate feedback on what that was like being in this journey. What was the structure like for you?
It's great. It's very interesting as someone who doesn't really look backwards much and who doesn't interrogate myself much. It's quite a challenging thing. Like, you know, that... Like when you sent the things, I was like, well, things have shaped me. I don't know. Everything, isn't it?
I love the fact the first shapeage was the person that said, you will do this, won't you? So that was your first door on a lubricated hinge.
Yeah.
Because you were very present. That was in the past, but you were very present to the nudge forward.
Mm.
So I like the fact you're very future focused. That was very
appealing. Yeah, so it's quite interesting. It's an interesting thing to kind of... You know, it's quite nice to think about those things from time to time.
It's a great life philosophy that I find very relatable because people, you know, we know that the human condition is to worry too much about the past or worry about the future too much, to be in the here and the now. And interestingly, someone challenged me about a week ago in a really good way. They were helping me with what I'm doing. And they said, so why are you doing this then? And then I gave the patter of, well, I'm inviting movers meet. And I gave the patter and they kept going, no, why?
Yeah.
And I recently realised that for so many people, their stories can stay locked in, untold, unloved. And I think what I'm doing, or I'd like to think what I'm doing, if I get people to say it out loud, they're more likely to live it out loud.
Yeah. And I think it's a really interesting thing, because I think when you do impro as much as I do, you get to tell your stories, you know, and stories that you didn't even know you had. So I never feel like I'm not... being expressed, or very rarely do I feel that I'm not being expressed. So I wonder whether that's the thing, like whether that is, you know, I think also like when I found improv, it was like the first time I did it on a stage, and it was like going, oh, this is the thing, here's the fit. And I think it just fits me and how I see stuff, or the way I improvise fits me and the way I see stuff. So I wonder whether all of those things mean, yeah, I don't need to look.
Yeah, because I actor train too, but then I didn't do the sort of that. Well, as soon as I discovered comedy improvisation, that was me too. And it still informs how I facilitate, coach, and do some keynote speaking now. It's all about yes and yes and yes and being in the moment. I don't always talk about yes and yes and, but I know that it informs the level of spontaneity of just being there as a resource to the audience. How can I help you type thing?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it helps you because it's like you just listen. All the other stuff is, you know, layers.
Mm.
But at the fundamental core is just listen. If you listen, then you'll know what to say.
Which is acting right there. That's the best acting technique.
Exactly.
The best actors are the best listeners.
And I, you know, You're never going to be a worse actor for doing improv, you know. Yeah.
And indeed, as we know from text study, you say what you say next because you were flipping listening, or you should have been.
Exactly. And it changes the way you say it, which is why, you know, when people do shows, scripted shows, and there's no life in it, you can tell. So you're like, you're not alive to how that person just said that.
Yeah.
You're responding to the line as written, not the line as said, you know.
And do you teach improv and acting as well? I'm imagining you would.
I don't actually. I do. I've done a bit. But it's not my.
I'm not. You will do that, won't you?
It's not my favourite thing to do. Like I can do it, and I'm quite good at it. But I'm very hard. I'm a very hard teacher, because I don't because I want commitment.
You don't want laziness.
If you're not committed, I can sniff it. I can smell it. And I get cross because I'm like, it's a waste of everyone's time if you're not going to commit to this. Even if you're doing it as a hobby, I'm still like, well, if you're asking people to pay to watch you, commit to it.
When you mentioned Ken Campbell earlier on, do you know Josh Darcy? Because he was someone. Yes, because I was at Westfield College with him way back when.
Ah, Josh is he was there at the weekend as well.
Doing the 50-hour improvathon.
Yeah, so he did the first sort of 5 hours, I think, or 6 hours.
Yes. Say hi to him if you see him too.
I will. I probably won't see him for another year, but I will.
Way, way back when there was Josh Darcy, Bill Bailey, me, Toby Longworth, people like that, all at Westfield College and Central School of Speech and Drama together.
Oh,
small
nice.
World, one wonder over it. Anyway, thank you so much, Ruth. A real pleasure.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much.